Hello, I'm Professor Bob Hewish from the Department of International Development Studies at Dalhousie University. You're listening to GDP, the Global Development Primer, the podcast dedicated to all issues in international development studies. Follow me on Twitter at Professor Hewish. It's another episode of GDP, the Global Development Primer podcast. And this week we have Vittoria Zanuso join us. She's a director, the executive director of the Mayors Migration Council, which is a global coalition of more than 200 mayors working to accelerate action on migration and displacement. As MMC chief executive, Vittoria built the MMC startup from a concept incubated by the Open Society Foundations and the Swiss government to a successful nonprofit organization, raising over 20 million US and growing the funder base from 2 to 12 donors and working with leadership board mayors to facilitate organizational oversight and strategic input, recruiting, overseeing, and developing a team of more than 10 full-time employees and representing the MMC in a multilateral fora, such as the UN General Assembly, and in external governing bodies, including the Steering Committee of UN Migration and the Multi-Partner Trust Fund. Now, Vittoria has positioned mayors worldwide as influential players in emerging policy frontiers, from climate migration to municipal finance. Her impact and thought leadership has been recognized in high-profile outlets such as Time, Al Jazeera, The Hill, Bloomberg, Inside Philanthropy. And prior to the MMC, Vittoria held several positions at the Rockefeller Foundation's 100 Resilient Cities Initiative. She was a founding member of the 100 Resilient Cities Initiative. Vittoria helped establish a network of 100 cities from the ground up and created the organization's urban migration practice. Vittoria holds an MPA in International Policy and Management from New York University's Robert F. Wagner Graduate School of Public Service and a BA in Politics from Queen Mary University of London. And we're here today to talk about what the Mayors Migration Council is all about and its role in global development. Vittoria, welcome to GDP.
Thank you, Robert. It's a pleasure being here.
No, it's great. And what a fantastic topic and initiative that you're discussing here about going to municipal governance as an area or stage of kind of being the forefront of some of these global development challenges. So could you just run us through what is the Mayors Migration Council and really how the initiative start and what you're doing with it today?
Yeah, of course. So the Mayors Migration Council, as you said, is a coalition of over 250 mayors from all over the world. And we work to accelerate action on migration and displacement. We were founded a few years ago. We were founded in 2018 during the UN conference for the adoption of the Global Compact on Migration, which is a landmark UN agreement to really govern migration worldwide. And at that point in time, a few mayors really felt that they were being excluded from these multilateral conversations, even if they had a lot to say, and if they were even them being at the forefront really of the issue. So the mayors of Amman in Jordan, Sao Paulo in Brazil, Kampala in Uganda, Milan in Italy, Montreal in Canada, among many others, really convened to launch the Mayors Migration Council and address this fundamental gap in the system. Most migrants and refugees are in cities, mayors are stepping up as problem solvers, but they face really restrictive national policies and systemic barriers to finance that really prevent them from delivering solutions at scale. So the MMC was created to really address these barriers, and we do that through what I call the elevator approach of the MMC. On the one end, we bring mayors up to influence international decision making, and then on the other, we bring resources down so that mayors can accelerate progress on the ground, but also build evidence of city leadership in action, which really helps feed positive narratives on migration, because more often than not, and unfortunately, there's a lot of toxic narratives going around about migration and its impact on destination communities. Maybe let me close by saying that this work is very important, because more than ever before, migrants and refugees are really looking to cities for safety and opportunity. Just to give you a few stats, one in every five international migrants lives in just 20 cities, and 70% of the world's displaced people seek refuge in urban areas. So as the climate crisis and unresolved conflicts continue to push more people from their homes, this trend is only going to increase. And while it's true that national governments deal with borders and visa regimes, it's really at the city level that most immediate needs of migrants and refugees are met, whether that's housing, healthcare, jobs, and it's really at the local level that social inclusion is built.
This is fascinating because in global development, you know, cities are often recognized as being important places, and you know there's all sorts of inner dimensions of sociology and geography we can get into with it. But in terms of the actual functionality of urban or municipal governance, I would say this is a very underexplored area within broader development circles. And one that, as you correctly say, like, look just how many people, just in terms of migration, are in just so few cities around the world, that this is going to be essentially, it's like the hidden frontier, the hidden forefront of what some of our development challenges are today. And I'm just curious, like, what are some of the major issues that, if we just speak about migration, that are facing some of these cities? Like, what are they really reeling with at the moment?
And in general, our cities really don't like to talk about migration and displacement necessarily as a crisis or as a problem. While it's obvious that the climate crisis and the conflicts that sometimes generate migration are a crisis and are a challenge, the migration that they cause doesn't necessarily need to be. Because if migration and displacement are managed properly at the local level, then they can actually become an opportunity for cities to build better, stronger, more resilient local communities and unlock benefits for other marginalized groups of the receiving communities. But that being said, cities operate in a general context where we see climate migration. We see conflict-generated migration. We see compounding economic and health crises that really make it difficult for cities to handle these challenges if they do not have the right policies and the right resources to manage these issues properly. But one first thing to say is that, unfortunately, most of the conversations about migration and displacement tend to really focus on the global north and on destination countries and cities, while in reality, most of the migration, one-third of all international migration is really between countries of the global south, and most of these journeys are really within cities in these countries. So a lot of the big cities in South Asia, in Africa, in the Middle East, are really grappling with much larger numbers of new arrivals than the cities in Europe or North America, which we too often hear about. And this is very true for climate migration. So I'm very happy. We've done a lot of work on that, and I'm happy to tell you more about that.
Well, that'd be really great. And I think that's something to remember, is that you mentioned earlier that there's such a negative demeanor around migration at the moment, and you know, notably in the U.S., it's just vitriol that comes at it, and the idea about buses going up to New York and Chicago with migrants coming over the border from Mexico. But the geography, as you said, is exactly that. It's usually neighboring countries that take on the overwhelming challenges of displacement. It was Lebanon, right? It was Beirut that was handling so much of the migration from the war in Syria, and now we're seeing displacement issues rise up between India and Bangladesh and other locations as well. So, you know, I always think that you know, in the global north, when you talk about municipal governance, it's usually you envision a lot of community meetings and a lot of complaining about, oh, the buses aren't running on time, or the waste collection is substandard, or there's, you know, the fire department's underfunded, whatever it is. But I think the issues that you're trying to bring to light here go far beyond that with some of the cities that you're working with. So yeah, could you fill us in on that?
Yes, absolutely. And I want to touch both on Lebanon and what we have done with Beirut, but also what we're doing with cities all over the world on climate-related migration, which is a very hot topic right now that many are talking about, but very few know what to do about it, and where a lot of the innovation is really happening in cities. So as it relates to climate-related migration, the World Bank projects that climate change could displace over 200 million people globally by 2050, and that this movement is not going to be international, so from global south to global north. This movement will be internal to certain regions. It will be short distance, and it will be rural to urban. For example, Africa will see 85 million internal climate migrants by 2050, and South Asia could see 40 million internal climate migrants by 2050. And we don't have to wait until 2050 to see the impact of this on cities. Climate migration is already becoming the new normal in many cities like Freetown in Sierra Leone, where the population might double over the next 10 years, in great part due to climate migration from across the country, or Dhaka North in Bangladesh, which is already welcoming 2,000 people every day, largely due to climate events that hit other regions of Bangladesh. And while climate migration is mostly internal to these regions, as I said, there are certainly global implications. For example, I was with the mayor of Milan, Italy, a few months ago, and he told me about this new study which shows that most migrants who came to Italy last year came from countries that are hit hard by the climate crisis, like Egypt or Bangladesh. So it's almost like a full circle here. And as it relates to the impacts that you were asking about, these new arrivals obviously increase demand on urban services and urban infrastructure. Meanwhile, cities are already struggling with other impacts of the climate crisis, for example, heat, fires, flooding, landslides, which could displace people within and from cities. So in a way, some new arrivals, they move to cities, they settle into informal settlements that are vulnerable to climate impacts, and they're ending up swapping one climate impact over the other. But what I say is that regardless of these challenges, our cities are really united in really seeing migration not as a challenge, but as an opportunity to build better, stronger communities. And we have seen that in Beirut, Lebanon, which, as you know, it has been affected by many compounding crises in recent years, from the economic crisis in 2019 to the devastating explosion in 2020 to the massive impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic just recently. And these crises have disproportionately impacted Beirut's marginalized neighborhoods, where many Syrian and Palestinian refugees live alongside other vulnerable groups. So with our support, with the MMC support and our Global Cities Fund for Migrants Refugees, the city of Beirut established its first municipal mobile health clinic to bring free and accessible healthcare services to residents, regardless of their origin. So we started this project during the pandemic, and after vaccinating thousands of Lebanese, Syrian, Palestinian, and Iraqi refugees, but also some Beiruti residents in need in this marginalized neighborhood, this mobile clinic is now a permanent element of the city's healthcare system and is supported by Beirut's own budget. And this example is just to say that obviously cities are at the center of many crises and definitely the destination of a lot of displacement and migration. But the same displacement and migration can bring in international funding and resources and technical support that then these cities can use to improve their systems and benefit other marginalized groups in the city that have overlapping needs with these new arrivals.
That's really interesting. And in particular, though, the arrivals themselves, I mean, housing. What about just simple, straight up accommodation for people who are coming in to these cities that are, you know, often have budget stretched thin, or there's a lack of critical resources and infrastructure. What are some of the plans to make sure that there's some sort of a roof over heads in the end?
Absolutely. And housing, I would say, after climate is the top challenge that many of our mayors point at, especially because there are other marginalized groups, like other homeless groups that might compete for the same type of resource. And so there's scarcity, which sometimes also creates social inclusion issues and pits one group against the other in a way. I think we have a lot to learn from the Colombian cities. Colombian cities had to welcome very large numbers of Venezuelan displaced people over the past few years. And they were able to provide housing and services, also thanks to very enabling policies at the national level. At the national level, the national government created some policies that allowed Venezuelan migrants to be able to work and therefore access those livelihoods that they would need in order to secure better housing. And so, to give you an example, we worked with the city of Medellin in Colombia, which used our Global Cities Fund for migrants and refugees to provide emergency shelter to hundreds of migrant and refugee families that were at risk of homelessness. And while providing them with this temporary housing, which was about like 3 months long, the city also coupled this service with a series of wraparound services to help these clients or these migrants register for employment, get their kids to local schools, secure formal jobs through employment or entrepreneurship trainings. And so thanks to this holistic way of taking care of homelessness, which was not just based on the housing itself and the housing stock itself, 80% of the families that participated in this program then were able to find permanent housing in the city. And the program was so successful that then the city was able to unlock millions of dollars from other donors to continue and expand the project. So this is just to say that there's a lot of cities that are struggling with this challenge, and this is definitely an issue. But sometimes it's also about looking at the life and the needs of new arrivals holistically, and understand that you will never be able to ensure long-term housing if the person in question also doesn't have a work permit or cannot work and cannot sustain themselves. And if they only have access to hotel rooms, for example, or very limited accommodations, without looking at everything else that the person needs in order to be self-reliant.
I think that's the key, right? It's something that municipalities have always run into some sort of challenge with, some of the other red tape or bureaucracy from county, department, state, province, and even federal. And you're right. Like if people are occupying cities without the ability to work, then that is going to radically change the capacity and dynamic of the city to sustain itself. I mean, you just think historically, cities are naturally built on migration, but for a lot of the historical record of cities, when people moved to a city, there was sort of the expectation and that opportunity would be there. And if now there's going to be other levels of bureaucracy that hinder people from attaining a good way of life, then, you know, the whole project, the whole very philosophy of what a city is kind of goes off the rails, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And indeed, even, the mayors of major U.S. cities like New York City, Chicago and Los Angeles and others, that they are really pushing the federal government to unlock or to create work permits that allow these new arrivals to work. That's a key component of their advocacy, in addition to advocacy for better access to funding and financial resources, because at the end of the day, these cities also need money in order to run good services. Absolutely. All of their residents.
So just on that point, I mean, how can cities be better equipped to deal with these challenges? Like, what sort of resources are available, and how can development organizations, say the multilateral or even the national level, how can they do better for some of the challenges that you're identifying here?
Absolutely. So besides the policy, better policies, and really looking at Colombia as a good example of what to do, there's the issue of limited resources. In cities really face systemic barriers to accessing the finance they need. And that's true locally because city governments have limited channels for generating their own source revenue, and that really varies country by country. But then also the national level, central governments often restrict their loans to local actors or the budget that local actors can use, which really curtails innovation. And then internationally, most financial investment mechanisms and multilateral banks require national sovereign guarantees or very high level of creditworthiness that cities, especially those in the global south and in low-income countries, rarely have. So cities are doing more with less, in a way. And we need really the international and national system to change the way that they make resources available to cities. This is really, we're talking about systemic change, and systemic change doesn't happen overnight. It really takes time to happen, but the situation is very dire. In 2022, only 1.2% of total international humanitarian assistance was given to local actors, including cities, and the target was 25%. Or going back to climate, only 10% of all international climate finance reaches cities. And because these financial regimes won't change overnight, we really need the philanthropic and international donors to start investing in cities now and localize their giving. And I'm saying philanthropic donors because they are more flexible and they always are the forefront of innovation. And I think that if the philanthropic world changes the way that they localize their giving, then the rest of the world will follow. And so to model behavior, the Mayor's Migration Council created this Global Cities Fund for Migrants and Refugees, which I told you about, which is a very nimble instrument that directs international funding and technical resources to city governments. And we do that in partnership with UN agencies. It's a very nimble instrument because we take international money and then we direct it to city governments to show these donors that it's possible to fund cities directly, and that at times is more efficient than funding these big NGOs or these big usual suspect organizations that often create parallel structures to city governments. They duplicate efforts and they do so at a much larger overhead.
That is a fantastic point, Victoria. The idea that such limited amount of international funding that's climate related is actually making it to cities is shocking how low that is, where this is the epicenter. I mean, people who are experiencing health related impacts from climate. I'm just thinking the number of fatalities that occur from heat every year. It's cities that's occurring. It's not countrysides. And the fact that people are seeking the better life, the refuge in the urban environment, but there's so little resources and so little understanding that seems to be going to it. This is really shocking.
Yeah, and the GCF is definitely like a small step in this direction. It's a small drop in the bucket, but it's showing what's possible. It's not the solution, it's the demonstration of the solution, because not only we are showing that it's possible to grant city governments directly, but also 90% of all of the cities that received our funding have already used this seed funding as a proof of concept to then independently unlock additional investments from other donors to continue or expand their projects. So there's almost a ripple effect where we do the first demonstration and then cities become self-reliant in being able to unlock more funding independently.
Well, there it is. And that's a great point, Victoria. And we're going to have to tie it off there for this episode. But We've had Vittoria Zanuzzo, who's joining us as the executive director of the Mayor's Migration Council, who's coming with some fantastic ideas, and I would say a real solid grip on what the frontier and front line of the climate crisis, the migration crisis that the world is currently experiencing. They're hitting the urban environments, and I think some of the ideas that you've brought forward here are ones that need to be heard, need to be paid attention to by development donors, actors, and politicians at different levels. So, Vittoria, thank you so much for the work that you're doing, and thanks so much for joining us on GDP.
Thank you, Robert.